Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Erin Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
We're sharing microphones today.
You're up.
And Pathé Machinery.
Oh, yeah. I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pathé Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can get pretty much anything you want when it comes to John Deere. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake. They've got tractors and mowers, and they've got electric. They've got everything up there. It's in stock and ready to go. Go up and see them or give them a call. Phone number 530-226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. You're on, Erin.
Switching back. We're all sharing microphones today because we have a full house. We have a very full house. Let's see. I'm going to let them introduce themselves because you all know more about each other than I know about you. But just to kind of, this is a local program about a local issue. But I would say if you don't have this program in your county or in your town or whatever, you should look into starting it because it has a long track record and it's been incredibly successful. And it's a program that I've watched for a number of years because I go to their graduations twice a year. You guys do it? It's twice a year, right? Twice a year. And I've watched all these people really change their lives. And it's in a, you know, we think about people who've committed crimes and, you know, involved with drugs and alcohol and things. And you think, oh, well, you know, never going to get better. And interestingly enough, there are people getting better, and there are programs designed to do that. And they're not, it's not just a big feel good, everybody gets out of jail free card, you know, which is, I think, a lot of times what the public thinks. They go wave a magic wand over people, and then poof, their crimes magically disappear, and they go right back to doing what they were doing, and nothing ever changes. But this is actually very different. It's called the Addicted Offender Program. I'll let you guys give more detail, but it started in 1995. I didn't realize it was that old here in Shasta County. So who wants to kick off? Start with the judge.
All right. Yeah, everybody pointed at me, so thank you very much for that. Yeah, my name is Daniel Flynn, and I've been a Superior Court judge for about 15 years, but associated with the Addicted Offender Program much earlier than that. I started in 2003. The Addicted Offender Program started from the bench officer standpoint by Judge James Ruggiero. He started the process in 1994, and it is a collaborative, meaning that we and others reached out to one another, including Shasta County Alcohol and Drugs, the probation department. At that time, we had the peace officers on board, so Redding Police Department had an officer dedicated to the program, public defender, district attorney. And the point was to do it better. I think you sort of touched on that. The real reason that it became important to look at this alternative to other modes of probation was because we recognized that there was a group of people that if there was a concentrated collaborative effort designed to address their primary issue coming into the criminal justice system, and for so many it was addiction, use of narcotics, that we would have different and more productive outcomes. That was really the thought. So what we're looking for are people who were addicted, who were committing crimes, and not people who were criminal-minded in the first instance who happened to be using drugs and alcohol. And so many people with different specialties were able to identify this group, and then once they began the program, we've had very good outcomes, as you said. People not only being clean and sober and staying out of the criminal justice system, but contributing to our community in really significant ways. So that's the basis of the program, and I've been on and off for years. There's been a number of other judges who have done it, but my consistency with it has been since 2023.
Yeah, because you were
not 2003.
Yeah, because I was going to say you were the judge at the very when I first started going to the graduations, and then. It switched, but it's kind of interesting. You know, sometimes maybe one of you will talk about this, how sometimes the group is really small, sometimes the group is really big. I know some people are in the program longer. How do you want to do it from here?
We'll send that one over to Kim McKinney. And she
can kind
of talk about
up.
How this looks on an individual basis, okay. Sort of from start and as people progress.
Okay.
Yeah, so my name is Kim McKinney. I am...
You have to get closer a little bit. Hello. I know it's kind of weird, but...
My name is Kim McKinney. I'm the clinical supervisor for the program. I've been involved with the AOP for about 12, 13 years. And when we, in answering that question about having big graduations, small graduation, yeah. graduating classes, I think one of the things that we get to benefit from here in treatment is we really look at readiness. It's not about, you know, a lot of treatment programs are, you know, designed or historically have been designed to treat for a period of time. And with the AOP, we look really, truly for readiness, whether or not these folks have changed the way that they think. This is way more than just being clean and sober. This is about changing the way that people think and becoming citizens, you know, having a citizen mindset. And that's one of the reasons why at commencements we really have, and we have a lot of pride when we're sending these people, and we take pride in presenting these people to the community. So it's not just they've completed the subscribed or prescribed treatment, but really we take pride in telling people these folks have changed. They've changed the way that they behave. They've changed the way that they think. And I think that that's one of the reasons why this program is so successful and really so, you know, our community is so amazed at it when they really hear about it.
How do you decide? How does somebody do it? Does this go to somebody different? How do you decide who gets in? How do you get into the program?
There's a lot of people who would be involved in that particular question.
It doesn't always come from the person. I mean, it isn't like someone gets arrested for a crime and goes, oh, wait, I want to be in the program.
No, we get that. After the number of years, they recognize that the AOP is something that, if they get into it, that there could be a very good outcome depending on their attitude to begin with. But really where it would start is with their own individual defense counsel.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm going to turn that one over to our team member here from the Public Defender's Office. Then it would go... essentially, initial discussion with the judge, then to probation and treatment. So there's a continuum along the line before someone's accepted. So we'll go this way.
Because the Addicted Offender Program is one you get accepted into. It isn't as... Yeah. Okay.
That is correct. Hi, I'm Dan Furlong. I'm the public defender who's been assigned to AOP for the last few months and hopefully for a long time in the future because I really enjoy being a part of it. Recovery is really important part of the criminal justice system as far as reducing recidivism and, making sure that we don't see folks again, because really it does take a tremendous amount of work and effort by a team around the client who ends up getting into treatment. So that's correct. So the process always begins with the person asking for AOP. And I always tell them, well, AOP's, you know, it's kind of like Harvard. It's tough to get into, but if you make it, you're gonna do great. So for certain folks, they don't necessarily need all of the tools that AOP is going to provide, which is a really tremendous amount of resources. Probation officer Delina Brown does an incredible job of keeping folks accountable. Our treatment team is just, you know, world class. And so they really are getting all of the resources that they need to make those changes. So it will start with a plea, usually. And a lot of times, you know, folks want AOP so bad that they will put more on the line than they already could get. So
what does that mean?
So, for instance, they could be facing, you know, a 3-year prison offer. And they'll agree, yeah. And so they can resolve their case and go to prison for 3 years. And I know that doesn't sound like fun, but it actually...
Yeah, that's like an offer I'm going to pass on.
And most of the cases in the criminal justice system will resolve rather than go to trial. So generally there's an agreement between the district attorney, the defense attorney, and the client that's approved by the judge to resolve the case. And a referral to AOP is a part of that. And I've had clients that will, you know, forego what I think is actually the easy route and spend 3 years in prison and ask to be part of AOP and have 11 years hanging over their head if they weren't to not complete the program or, you know, something were to happen if they were to violate in some
way. Kind of an incentive.
It is. It's a carrot,
like a
carrot and a very big stick. There's various ways that folks do it, but oftentimes they are pleading open, basically, you know, exposing themselves the maximum exposure just in order to get into the program. And that's kind of the reputation that AOP has amongst the, you know, my clients. You know, they know that if they can get into AOP and work it, they're going to have their lives changed. And they know that just from all the exposure the program's had over the years. So,
How many people typically drop out or don't make it through the program that started? Is that a thing?
It is a big thing. So I'll field that question since I've been with it for quite a bit of time. From the people who start, it really depends on the character of the people who are actually in it. The AOP has changed significantly starting about 10, 12 years ago with realignment Prop 47. The folks that we had originally been looking at had a lower level type of an offense to get them eligible or brought them into the system. Since Prop 47, since realignment, and the things that have happened since then, we're looking at people with higher needs. You know, sort of to piggyback what Dan Furlong was saying, most of the time, once they get into the AOP, they've extended the period of time that we're going to be supervising them. We're going to ask more of them than traditional probation terms would have. So they're doing a lot more. They're doing it a lot more intensely. They're showing up to court every week, particularly at the beginning. And they've got the resources dedicated specifically from the probation department to check in on them multiple times. So they're actually doing more. They're under a bigger microscope. Early, if you hadn't had a lot of the exposure, we're talking about what Kim was identifying as readiness. Is this person just saying this is what I want to avoid something, or are they actually saying this because regardless of the fact I don't know how to get there and I'm changing things that are going to be scary for me, are they ready to do it? Early, we had more dropouts because they hadn't hit that point in their life where they've lost a lot. They've lost everything. They've lost family. They're homeless and things like that. These days, our dropout rate is actually, I think, lower from 10, 12, 15 years ago. And I think it's because we are actually identifying a group of people who are just so much more willing and able to say, I'm going to drop my thinking, and I'm going to trust you to change the way that I think and move forward. I think are probably at the group, we're probably graduating about 80% of the people these days. I think it's probably a good number. I didn't look it up, but I think that's what it looks like.
So for the people who don't live in California, little snippet on Prop 47 and that kind of thing, we're sort of using inside baseball here, and there are people who listen, you know, outside of California, and there are people living in California who don't know what Prop 47 is either. So
yeah.
How did that change go? And I'm kind of curious, are there any offenses that can't go through this program? Like maybe somebody talks about the criteria of what people have been involved in.
There's two big questions.
Like
I'll go with the
things,
first one because it's really the first thing is there are certain things that don't qualify. We're looking at qualifications again, and then once we have a person and they're being reviewed by the team, whether they're suitable to actually go through the program. Sex offenses. We don't bring folks who are 290 registrants, people who have convictions for sex offenses. They don't get in, or that their current offense is a sex offense. People who use weapons in their crime, knives, guns, things like that, no, they don't come in. Because that on a scale of the types of things that are dangerous to the public, those people, they're not there. What we're looking at are felony cases, but we're not looking at people who have had a history of some violence, people who have a history of sex offenses. There's others, right? I can't remember the other part of your question, though.
Well, good. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk about it while we're celebrating Free Enterprise. So you're listening to We the People. You can find this program later. I hope that you will use the commercial-free archive and send it out widely. You can find that at We the People Radio. Dot US. I stole Bill's part.
No mic.
What shall we do about them when they move into your neighborhood? They take over, but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Then they go. What shall we do about them?
They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing. They did a bad, bad thing.
You ever loved someone so much you thought your little heart was gonna break into?
And we're back. Oh, last time we played that song, a rock flew through the window, so we have improved. It just dawned on me. I was like, gosh, that was the rock song. That's not good. Especially with the judge sitting right there. Is there like an extra punishment if you get the judge harmed? Never getting out of that jury duty thing. Darn it.
Yeah, probably not, but at least think so.
My jaywalking is a crime now. Jaywalking's back on the books. Okay, so Prop 47.
Yeah, we had a good conversation about that at the break, and so I'm going to ask Kim to jump in too. For those who don't know, Prop 47 was an initiative that did a whole lot of things. As it relates to what we do, there were a number of offenses which had been felony cases, felony charges, such as simple possession of drugs, certain thefts. They were all reduced to the grades of misdemeanors. That's a very simplistic way to sort of summarize Prop 47. And it happened because societies generally in the United States has, over a plus 200-year history, had a pendulum that swings between a punishment model of criminal justice and a rehabilitation model of criminal justice. There's always been those components to greater or lesser degrees, and so Prop 47 was one that swung its pendulum that direction of towards rehabilitation. One of the problems that developed, however, was there was less of an incentive for someone who was addicted to see, I'm in trouble now, because now there's the consequences of felony cases and the potential of going to prison. Another thing that realignment did was remove certain felonies from going to prison. When you hear prison as somebody who's being accused, that's bad. I don't want to go there. If there's no possibility of that's bad and going there, and it's become a misdemeanor versus a felony, felonies have closer supervision, a lot more time involved, things like that, there's less of an incentive to seek the rehabilitation because treatment is hard. Rehabilitation is hard. And from that point, I think when we were in the break, Kim said a couple of really good things about that that I think are important to know. So we'll send it back to Kim.
Well, I'm not even really sure I remember what I said, Judge.
Oh, sure.
I think what we're really talking about is why drug court works so well. And the reason why it works so well is because it kind of sits in the middle between, you know, justice or punishment and reward. Mm-hmm. You know, and we were really talking about how, I mean, addiction is really formed through the reward system. The brain is hijacked. You are rewarded significantly by the drugs of choice, you know, in our community today, the fentanyls, the opiates, the methamphetamines, that kind of stuff. Why would we not want to use the criminal justice system as a tool to try to rehabilitate those people using incentives and sanctions? And drug court is fabulous for that. There's a lot of built-in consequences, of course. I mean, we can use custody, we can use authority, we use that, and we use it appropriately through the probation department and the superior court. And we also use incentives from those places as well. There's, you know, folks that, you know, and this is part of the rehabilitation and the way that they think and becoming a citizen, to learn how to respect the courtroom, to learn how to respect rules and guidelines and authority and begin to really respect that. So in those senses, I think that drug court is phenomenal for this part of the population that is so severely addicted. You know, we definitely talk about serving high-risk, high-needs folks, And so these people are the people that are going to reoffend if there's not an intervention at this level. And there's also a significant need in the way of the level of treatment and the level of interaction that they have with their treatment providers and their probation department. So I'd love to really hear from probation and treatment as well as to like how that happens and what that looks like.
It's a standoff.
I'm Nicole Foote. I am the social worker for the Addicted Offenders Program. I've been with the county for about 2.5 years, but in the field for 5.5 now. And this has been, it's a beautiful process to be a part of the Addicted Offenders Program. When we talk about that reward versus sanction, really learning how to incentivize this population with courage and praise. They come into this program completely untrusting of probation, of walking into a courtroom, respecting authority, and teaching them that it's okay to confide in us, that it's okay to say I'm struggling. I was sitting here thinking about when Dan was talking about like a 3-year offer for somebody who is significantly impacted by drug addiction. They would much rather go to prison than have to think about trying to change that thought process in their brain. It is an extremely courageous act for them to say, this is worth me trying something different, because it's so hijacked in their brain. Delena and I work well together in really talking about the process of what's going to benefit them more, whether it's a writing assignment or getting to go out to coffee and talking on a one-on-one individual basis.
You guys have you decide kind of how it you sort of tailor it by the person.
Absolutely. It's extremely individualized. Okay. So I always explain it to the participants like an umbrella. We have an umbrella of policies and procedures. But underneath that umbrella are about 43 individual people who have to be tailored to very individually for it to work for them. So while the rules and the policies are the same, I'm going to approach it a little bit different with each person based on severity or individuality of what do they need right in that moment.
Yeah, I think when people think of probation, they think of, you know, you guys are hiding in the bushes waiting to trip them up, you know?
So my name is Selena Brown. I'm the probation officer. I've been with the Addicted Offender Program for just over a year, but I've been in the probation field for over 5 now. So as far as the view on probation in the beginning, they are very untrusting. And, you know, one thing that I try to remind them is that I'm here to help them. The last thing that I want to do is put them in jail. I want to be a benefit of their recovery and really help them see that probation is not there to hurt them. As Nicole said, we do communicate all day long, every day, to see what is going to benefit the individual directly. So, for example, one person might benefit from house arrest, where the other person might benefit from a 3-page writing essay on integrity. You know, it really depends on the individual person.
So you can do the house arrest. That's an option.
Yes. The other thing that we utilize is GPS. So if we feel that they're not abiding by the rules, rather than putting them in jail, we'll put a GPS on them to be able to track where they're at.
Wow. So, I mean, it is like real probation. I mean, it isn't, oh, you're in the program, you know, see you later.
It sounds
like we're, you know, you're going to become best friends.
Yeah. So, I mean, we do become very close. I don't like to say friends, because I do
okay,
have to.
Hey, you know what I mean?
I know.
The BFF thing, you know, it's become kind of commonplace.
You know, it's a much higher level of accountability through the Addicted Offender Program. For example, somebody who may be low risk is only going to come in and fill out a monthly report once a month and maybe be checked on at their house maybe once every 6 months. Where I see people that are early in the program 2, 3, 4 times a week, and then even the farther they get along, I'm still seeing them every single week to have them come in for test line and make sure that they are remaining sober and doing all of the things that they need to do. So it is very high level of accountability.
So if you are a probation officer with the Addicted Offender Program, do you also have regular probation people, or do you only do this?
So I only do this.
And how many people can you field at a time? Because it sounds really time, like a big time commitment.
if I recall correctly, I believe our max number is 50.
At the same time?
Yes.
While we're all being BFF?
Well, so that's why I need treatment and the judge's help. I don't do it alone.
You seem so mild mannered. Your hair's not even sticking straight up. You're freaking out.
I think the best way to describe it is we use this analogy when we're doing evaluations, bringing somebody in, is that the Addicted Offenders Program is like, we're like the bumpers when you take your kids bowling, right? And you want to see them succeed, but they're just not strong enough to make it for a strike, so you put the bumpers up so they feel some accomplishment. Delina and I and the treatment team are like the bumpers. And when they first get into the program, those bumpers are really high because for whatever reason, based on criminality and addiction, they haven't been able to make a strike. They always find themselves in the gutter. So we put the bumpers up so they can start feeling somewhat successful. The further they get along in the program, those bumpers start to go down and down and down. So while we could hold 50, we have 50 participants that are at various phases of the program. So some who are coming in 4 to 5 times a week and some who are only coming in once a week. So while it is a heavy caseload, there's some that are getting ready to graduate where we're just once a month, hey, how you doing, checking in, seeing how they are.
And I think to your point about Ms. Brown having a tough job, she certainly does an amazing job. But a big part of the program, and you'll hear from a lot of the folks who are coming in the second hour, is peer accountability. And some of the most important messages folks in the first phases of the program get are from folks in the later phases, in the graduates and the alumni. And so that community sort of gives each other the support and the accountability that they need. And that is, I think, a really integral part of the program. You'll hear some amazing stories.
Yeah, we kind of buried the lead. The people who graduated from the program are here the second hour. Oops, we forgot to tell you that. So it isn't just all about the how you get in and who's doing it, but who did it. Who did it and who made it through. And that, I think, is super important for people to hear, that that's actually possible. And they're really good about speaking about their experience. I've always enjoyed the graduations. Okay, my favorite part is when they show their booking photos. You're like, no, that was not you. Tell me this. How many people in this program, I know you can't give me an exact number, but maybe Judge Flynn would have a better idea. Okay, over the time period, if you had to say how many people have been in and out and in and out and in and out and in and out of the system and then finally did this versus people who maybe hit it a couple times and decided, okay, I'm out. I don't want to do it anymore.
It's not
crimes. The go to jail, be in trouble. How long does, how deep does the hole have to get?
Depends on the person.
Okay.
Yeah, and we've noticed, we have, say, 43 people in the program right now. I think that's probably the number. We have 43 different people. All of them are different. All of them have come from just slightly different backgrounds, although we have heard the macros, there are some who have been to prison 2 or 3 times. There are some who have never been there. There are some who have lost family and friends. There are others who had very little of that to begin with and are trusting on streets and the other sorts of things which they've had to adapt to as a lifestyle, And I think I want to kind of piggyback on what Delina was just talking about. In addition to some of the things you do at traditional probation, I order people to stay away from people who are very close to them. I'm asking them to do things that we don't ask of any other probationers that sometimes is a lot more difficult than just stopping doing the narcotic. We're asking them to stay away from a significant other, stay away from a family member, stay away from places that were close to you that you find security in. And because there's all sorts of different triggers for each individual person. So it really is important for people to understand that each individual has to be considered differently. And they teach us all the time. As I say, I've been at the program since about 21 years now. And each person continually educates me so that I have a bigger bank of experience, not only for sanction, but for what's working really well. And it's amazing to be learning not only from this team, but from each individual members. You've heard the sixth man analogy when it comes to basketball. You got a good sixth man. The peers are an outstanding sixth man. And the further they get along into the phases, the more they hold each other accountable, and that is real powerful.
We were talking about probation earlier. What I know you said it's a little tougher in this program while you're on probation versus regular probation. So I don't know if you can expand on that, but how is it different if I commit a crime and I'm on probation versus on probation and in your program? What's the difference there?
So if we say regular probation, right, mm-hmm. an individual has committed a crime, they have made a plea agreement for a two-year probation stance. Generally, they're not looking at the huge open plea of 11 years often, so they don't really have a lot to lose if they fail. They have the basic terms and conditions. They have to report, give us an address. They are searchable. But, you know, the lower-risk individuals, they aren't really supervised in a, right. in a whole sense, you know. Where AOP, it's... they have extra terms, as Judge Flynn said. You know, we may order them to stay away from their mom or dad. They have to complete residential treatment. They have to remain in a sober living house. They have to get and maintain employment. They have to do things that on normal probation, however we like to see that happen, it's not a requirement as right. it is in AOP. Correct.
Yeah, and I would think what the judge is saying about hanging around people that they – hung around with before is still a big thing either way you go, because that's a group that gets you in trouble.
One thing I would add is, you know, a lot of my clients only see the judge once or twice, you know, before they're put on probation. And when you're in AOP, at least in the first phase, you're seeing His Honor almost every week, if not every week. Mm-hmm. And you also have the additional support and accountability of Ms. Brown and the treatment team. So when you only see the judge once or twice, you sort of, you have your sentence pronounced and you see the judge, and that's the, you know, authority that hands that down. When the AOPers come in, they see His Honor as someone who, you know, can help them through problems, you know, certainly hold them accountable through lesser sure. Sanctions and things like that, lower than prison. But as a supportive figure who's there to help them in their recovery, not just, you know, sentence them on a case. So I think it's such an incredible experience for them to kind of be transformed into seeing the justice system as something that wants to help them be in a better right. place.
Yeah, I like the guardrail analogy, because it kind of tells them, you're not in this alone. We're going to kind of set some borders for you here, and we're going to help you stay within those borders. Where a regular probation period or a regular probationer, they still have guardrails, but they don't have the guidance, they don't have the support, they don't have people constantly helping them stay within
absolutely
the rules.
So okay, so I'm curious, do you have people who get involved in the program and go, a lot of togetherness, I'm not into it.
Yes.
Like, all the time. All the time. Okay. All the time.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious about that. I mean, you know, we don't want to focus on failure, but I guess I want to look at the reality of how this goes. I mean, people get in, have, because let's face it, we do it every January 1st, right? Don't all of us do this? You know, I'm going to whatever. And then, you know, oh my God, is it the second already? Did I already drop the ball?
Well, I would really like to speak to the whole concept of maybe the difference between treatment, drug court, and then actual recovery. What ends up happening is a life of recovery is what we're really setting them up for. Mm-hmm. And recovery has a way of grabbing somebody, you know. You think you don't want family, and really that's about fear. That's about fear or maybe previous experience with family. And this is very familial. The AOP is, and it grabs people, and they end up liking what they thought they wouldn't, you know?
Well, you guys do a lot. Yeah, I mean, this isn't just about, you know, crime and punishment and some stuff in between, because I see at these graduations, you have a lot of people who have become parents again. They've gotten their kids back. They haven't had relationships with family that are all out now out in the audience, and you can see that this has reconnected them really significantly, actually, to their people.
Yes, and you know, at the beginning of the program, you talked about how there's a lot of people out there that believe that this kind of program doesn't really hold them accountable. Yeah. You know, that really they're wanting to see these people do time. They're wanting them to see, pay their price, right? And what I'm here to tell you from a treatment and a recovery perspective is that there is nothing that holds people more accountable to their own behavior than actually working a program of recovery. Addressing those things in their life that make them do what they do, actually making a real amends to the community and to their family and to themselves, and commitment and behavior of change.
And taking them off the treadmill. Because,
yes.
I know, society does, you know, we do get kind of an eye for an eye sort of mentality. But I think really, if you ask people, they'd say, well, I'd really like to see fewer people, you know, using drugs and destroying their life. So we have to take a really quick break, and then we're going to come back because I see Judge Flynn is having a moment there.
He's going.
Oh, darn it. No moment. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Bring him back.
I am the eye in the sky looking at you. I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind. And I don't need to see anymore to know that
I could be dumb dead, sleeping in an alley, didn't matter to me. I got lost walking in the valley where it could have been 1993, when it goes badly, after burning so bright. Trying to make sense of a hopeless situation, feels like dying in the middle of the night, when it goes badly, you're alone in the darkness, nothing said.
All right, we're back. Hey, at the break, we were talking a little bit about family and how family is involved in the program. Let's touch on that a little bit. And how do you get, and how effective is that to bring family in to the program?
I think that it's extremely effective to be able to bring family into the program. Sometimes we struggle with families who have a disconnect because they don't understand the disease of addiction and how it hijacks the brain. So they're simply looking at behavior, crime, lying, stealing, cheating, manipulating. They're just a bad person. And so really offering them the education and support to wrap around them to understand that once we can remove the substance and we can work on the core behaviors, then we'll start seeing those changes. I think even often our participants will come in thinking, I just need to stop using drugs and alcohol. And it's
just need to stop doing that.
Right. And it's not until we start digging into some of those core issues that they realize that it's the criminological thinking, the lying, the stealing, the manipulation that really is the center of why they were making some of the choices that they were making. Delana made a good point saying that, you know, we bring the families in and say we're all a team. So if you have a question or concern, call Delana, call myself. We'll chat about it. We'll bring in everybody together. I've had beautiful moments of child reunification, bringing in parents together, talking to be able to get on the same page of what that looks like for their kids. It's amazing.
And you were talking about parents as a or family, I guess, not just parents.
Yeah, so family members who the individuals are close to or are really a part of their recovery community. You know, I only get probably 15 hours a week with these individuals. So all of that other time, you know, I need somebody else helping and wanting them to succeed. So I will give them my card. I'll give them Nicole's contact information, and I'll say, give us a call. Tell us if you're worried about something. So then that way I can address it. But I also address it in a way that they don't know that mom or dad or brother called me. You know, I will find a way to harbor that relationship and still address the action.
Yeah, yeah, because I would imagine your mom called is probably not.
No.
Your mom called, wanted me to talk to you. They've probably been there and done that a couple times.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. So what are we not what are we not and to go backwards when they go to court repeatedly when you said that they have to go in and see the judge, what does that mean? What do they do?
As far as seeing the judge,
yeah, when you have to go see the judge and you're not actually it's not actually a court thing and you're not getting sentenced, what else do you do? What else are you doing?
I can do anything I want to, which is... It depends on what's happening.
Probably have a song for that.
When people come in, there's we've already talked quite a bit about what sort of got them there, what their offenses are, and because they have such a close connection with our treatment team, with our probation officer, sometimes people aren't recognizing some fundamentals. So I can do everything from encouragement or specifically addressing something that is happening that's interfering with their ability to get on to the next step. Somebody doing something as simple as turning in the meeting cards. So they have to go to outside meetings like AA or NA. And they may have, for whatever reason, missed one of the three that they were supposed to do. In their mind, that's not a big deal. But to us, it is a huge deal because what we're trying to do is establish habits that create their own boundaries and lifelong success. With a particular individual, it may be something that we address with a letter. With somebody else, it may be important enough to get them to understand their creation of their fundamentals and their foundation, so we stop and grab them. So I sit them up in the jury box, and they sit up in the jury box so they can go to jail for however many days. We have a big continuum of things. If I call you first, either something really good happened, or you're probably going to jail.
So you're like the dad. This is like a dad thing.
It kind of is.
You know, because like when your dad says, you know, when I get home, we have to talk. You're like, ooh.
Yeah.
That's like not.
Well, I like to use probation. Well, you're going to need to talk to Ms. Brown about that. But ultimately, yeah, I have a lot of tools to help me doing that sort of thing. One of the things that we do have as a tool is what we call flash incarceration. And which means you do something, you don't need to come to me. Probation can put you in jail.
Oh.
You know, we all know when it's happening. But, yeah, this needs to happen now, not this Friday.
And who picks how long?
So, generally, I talk to treatment to decide on the individual kind of what the sanction should be, what it should look like. You know, sometimes it's for 24 hours. Sometimes it's for up to 10 days. It really depends on, you know, that individual. But, you know, one thing that I wanted to piggyback on with the judge is, you know, there's no better incentive than the judge saying, good job. Or shaking someone's hand, or, you know, really being like, I see the changes that you're making, and this is how.
That's got to be a big deal.
Oh, it's a huge deal. Yeah. So, you know, that's one incentive that we really like to utilize a lot, is him just saying, good work.
And that's what we were talking about, the individuals training me. There, you begin to see changes that are amazing. Because a lot of the folks have been in front of me 2, 3, 4 times over the last 3, 4, 5 years. So I kind of understand what has been happening, but when you begin to see the changes, Kim talked about a light going on. I now get what recovery is versus abstinence from drugs for a short time. And when that happens, it's really exciting, and I do like to point out to them, this is what we see. This is what I see. Congratulations. Great work. Keep that up.
And I would like to add, you know, when one of the things that's really nice about the Addicted Offender Program is when we do flash incarceration, because there's so much communication within the team, we are going into the jail and talking to them during that time. So treatment does not stop. So that's just it's kind of like a timeout. You know, they're getting a timeout, and let's take the time and focus on what got you here. How can we change? How can we not, like, they want it just as much as we do for this to stop happening. You know, when someone lands in jail again, it's kind of like a time to refocus and address the issues, the root causes.
And one thing that I want to add real quick is once they're accepted into the AOP program, it can take 6 to 8 weeks for them to get into residential treatment. And we utilize that point to start working on the recovery process with them prior to even being in residential treatment.
Okay. So if I'm hearing this right, once they're in the program and they mess up and end up in jail, they don't get kicked out of the program. You try to recognize where the failure was and get them back on track?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the incarceration is a blunt hammer, and it's not a good tool for everything. If you take a look at, these are folks who have multiple offenses and have not for a period of time, because of the addiction, been able to recognize, here's how I stopped doing that. Do we expect there to be glitches in the program? We absolutely do. And if we didn't, and then every time they missed a meeting or did something else, we were kicking people out, we wouldn't have anybody in the program.
Right.
We all are like that. We all have things that we mess up every single day, and what we're trying to be is self-aware so that we can correct it. This is a big part of what we're doing, is getting them to be self-aware so that they recognize before it happens and they've corrected it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's when the work, if you don't mess up, what we used to say about skiing, if you're not falling down, you're not pushing yourself. You know, this is exactly the thing that, and sometimes they take pride in their recovery. When we're addressing something that we saw that was a step backwards, they're ready to listen and say, how can I not do that again? That's the mindset that we begin to create as early as when they're accepted, as Delina was saying, and we're beginning to work with them while they remain in custody waiting for residential treatment.
Okay. You had a burning thought.
I didn't. Your Honor said it for me.
Was it just because the microphone was a?
It was just like
it was on flying. It was flying up and down.
It was flying, kind of mind of its own.
And we're having some microphone challenge today.
You mentioned at the break about folks wanting to know how to get help in the community, and
yeah, like let's say you're somebody who really should be on this program, but you actually don't. You either didn't get caught yet. Probably is the deal. You didn't get caught yet, so don't go commit a crime. That's not the way in, or that
please,
kind of is
please,
the way
please
in.
Please do not do that.
Yeah, don't do that.
We don't encourage that at all. We have a lot of resources in our community, Good News Rescue Mission, Hill Country Wellness Center, North American Mental Health, Empire Recovery.
Visions of the Cross.
Oh, yeah, a lot of people
County,
go through
alcohol
that.
Alcohol and drug, yes.
Yeah, about time recovery and sober living.
Now, are those ones where you live there, or are these?
Some, yeah.
Yeah,
some are.
Visions of the Cross in particular, it starts with intensive residential treatment a lot of the time and then moves into sober living, where you have a little bit more freedom but still are an intensive outpatient. So those are some of the resources that are there. We at the Public Defender's Office have a tremendous team of social workers, John Cravens, Kathy Noose, and Katie Kavanaugh. And we always encourage folks that have been our clients in the past to just come by. We'll help you get treatment. And it's pretty unusual for someone not to have had at least a misdemeanor or some sort of run-in with the law where they've been our client. Our office is certainly one place folks can go if they've been in trouble. There's a lot of folks in the community that really do great work helping out.
So if there's somebody out there that's on probation currently, can they contact you or contact somebody and say, "Hey, I want to start the program."
So if they are on probation, they can go to their probation officer, explain that they are struggling with addiction, and the probation officer can really help them and guide them into the right program for them.
Okay.
You know, some people might need residential treatment. Some people might just need a change of environment. So maybe where they're residing, there's drugs and alcohol there. They can get themselves clean, and then they can join a sober living like About Time Recovery because that offers a sober environment.
See. Okay. So they don't necessarily have to do the addicted offender program. There's other programs out there that may be more suited for
Absolutely.
Their situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and kind of to piggyback with that, if we're talking about the subject matter, don't commit a crime to come see me. I've got plenty of work to do. We don't need job security that way.
Although he does seem kind of fun, but probably not if you see him that way.
Yeah. No. There are some times when I really am unfun. But the... For example, our Addicted Offender Program graduates, a lot of them give back in a number of different ways, including their alumni group. So you're taking a look out there. Something as simple as telling someone, go to an NA meeting. Because at the NA meeting, you're going to see an intersection of people in the fabric of the recovery community. I mean, we have people who are in places where they're giving counseling, and a lot of times they went into counseling because they came out of addiction.
We have like 1 minute left. Just a heads
up. But just
up.
Go to a meeting and
but,
talk
yeah, because it's a buddy program.
And
I see that with this. Everybody has
exactly.
a sponsor, and it's all about working with somebody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and a lot of those people. It's funny. I think that's why I like going to this graduation over and over, because I look around the room and I'm like, oh, that guy was in the thing last time, and that lady was in the, and so they become mentors for the people who come after them. How often does that happen?
Lots.
It looks like a lot, but
yes.
I'm not actually the eye in the sky. You guys are.
We have some current mentors right now who are helping others who are in earlier phases that come back and want to help guide them. And there's a significant amount that, like Your Honor was saying, that come from the background, and then it inspires them with the compassion and empathy to want to pour back into their community and get into the helping field.
That's one thing for me to say somebody, hey, you need to do this. It's another thing for somebody who's been there and done that to tell them,
lots
you need
more
to straighten
credibility.
This out. Yeah. And so there is. There's a whole different group of people in the recovery community that they can go to simply by showing up at a meeting and say, I need that.
That's awesome.
And it's such a great
So now we meet the graduates.
Yeah.
Next hour is the graduates. So stick with us. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us. Welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. It's the second half today on March 10th, 2024. I forgot to do the date last time. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cunliffe, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. You can get pretty much anything you want when it comes to John Deere up there at Pape Machinery. They've got tractors, mowers, implements, great parts and service. Go up and see them. They can get you fixed up. Spring's right around the corner. Once that sun comes out, that grass is going to grow about a foot a day. So be prepared and go up and talk to them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, or you can give them a call at 530-226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Well, and now that we've done the time change, you'll get more grass?
Yes.
Does the grass grow faster when you change the time?
Yes, it does. Yeah. Extra hour.
I'm really proud of all of us because we had, what, five people in here the first time? Now there are four of you and the two of us. So you add all those people up, we all got the time change correct. That's kind of impressive, actually. It's just impressive on the face of it.
Nice.
So this is like part two of the Addicted Offender Program. So in part one, and you guys were listening, so you kind of know what they said about the program. So you're going to fill in the blanks of the things they didn't talk about because you were on the receiving end. And I cannot remember the specifics, but I know the one thing we didn't talk about the first hour that it always catches me in the graduations, that people say, yeah, the cop that arrested me, he was talking to me on my way to jail about the Addicted Offender Program. Did that happen to any of you?
No,
I've heard people say that, and I was like,
we do invite them to our graduation, typically, though, whoever was our arresting officer, to see the difference. But that wasn't the particular conversation that I had with the cop during
You were having
time.
A different conversation?
It was a little different.
Kind of a less pleasant conversation?
Yeah. Less pleasant,
less supportive?
Sure. Yes.
It happened to me, for sure.
Did it?
Yeah. The officers that arrested me, and I had one in particular that, like, had a special interest with me. And so, like, he wasn't actually stalking me, but he was pursuing me avidly.
Oh.
And when
he thought you should go to jail?
He knew that I needed to go to jail.
Oh, okay.
And so whenever he would arrest me, he'd give me the lecture. And the lecture always included, like, you know, when are you going to be sick and tired of being sick and tired? You know, this will be your ninth prison term. Are you serious? You know, is this your route?
Is that for real?
That's for real.
Oh, that's bad.
It is. But unfortunately, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. I was curious. You can give as much or as little information as you want, but I'm kind of curious at what, I mean, obviously everybody hits a point in their life with a variety of things, but drugs is a biggie where you just can't do it anymore. Did you know you wanted to do this program? Did all of you know?
So for me, I, in 2018, I got stabbed
And it was a pretty traumatic incident. And I, after I got out of the hospital, I had gone to jail for warrants, of course. And I requested the program. And at that point, I was, there wasn't really much hope for me getting into the program. So I requested again, ended up getting an interview and getting on to AOP.
Why didn't you have much hope of getting in it?
Just the public defender that I had at that particular point in time didn't seem like he had hope in me, I guess you would say.
Oh, okay.
Is that a big part of the issue, is whether or not you get a recommendation?
I feel like with substance use and mental health in the community, there's a big stigma about it. So for people to say, hey, I need some help, it's really hard to get there.
Yeah, I wasn't somebody that wasn't even, wouldn't have normally been considered because it was my first charge and I wasn't really facing any prison time. But I had had family that had recently been on the AOP program, and I saw the difference. It was actually my best friend and my cousin, and she was on the program, and I, going from where we were at in that drug scene to where she was now, I wanted to learn how to live a life that way. So I wrote a 5-page letter to the committee at the time, begging them to give me an opportunity to learn how to live a different life, because I hadn't had that. I grew up within the glory of the drug scene and the repeated prison terms and in and out of foster care and things. And so I really wanted to learn how to do something different, because it was a generational curse throughout my family for years. So,
wow. And I know for me, like, I didn't know about the AOP program. I was actually accepted twice. My first time, you know, being homeless for 4.5 years, not having my kids and looking at a prison term, jails was a revolving door for me. They came and saw me when I was in jail and offered me the AOP program. But when I got out, I had nowhere to go because I had been homeless. So I just took off and I ran for 2 more years, and then got arrested again. And they came and saw me and saw something in me still that I didn't see in myself, and accepted me on the program. And by that time, I was like, done. You know, I was like, I wanted something different for me and my kids. So
just out of curiosity, so we should do like some age. So how old were you when this all happened? Ballpark?
I was 27 when they first accepted me, and 31 when I got onto the program.
Okay. And then
I was 27 too.
Yeah, interesting.
I was 26 when I got onto AOP.
Interesting.
I was 54 when I entered into AOP.
Steve, you're just breaking the mold.
Yeah. Well, I come from a really, really long background of drug and narcotic abuse, and so I got blessed by God, I feel, because the district attorney was highly against me receiving the AOP program because I have 9 prior prison terms for narcotic offenses. And that's a habitual criminal status.
And you were like 50 at the time or something?
54.
You were 54 at the time?
Yeah, 57 now.
Wow.
I just graduated in January.
Right. No, I saw that. And I was really glad that you were one of the people who was going to come on. Because listening to – you guys always give like a little snippet of a story in the graduation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, listening to the different people in this group, there was such a range. You know, I know you had said that you were not a long-term criminal person and not been arrested before. And then when you came on and said, I didn't remember how long, I went home and I told Bill, I go, this is a story that has to get, you know, be told, because there is a range of people. Because I'll bet you the people in your family said, Steve, you're never making it.
Yeah, most of my family members had given up on me decades ago.
Did anybody want you to go through the program, or was everybody sort of...
Well, I'm at an age where I got to experience, like in the 90s, it was Proposition 36. In 2000...
What did that one do?
That was the get-out-of-jail-free card. If you were a narcotic offender, you were eligible either to go to prison or to go to a program. I don't know who's going to choose prison over a program, so I went to the program every time. And so,
But the program was just like, check the box, you're in the program, and now, oh, look at the time, program's
over.
It was
the get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yeah, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Like, I had no intention of stopping my narcotic abuse. I just wanted to get out of prison. But in 2000, yeah, all the laws changed. What was it? AB 109 and legislation 47 came out, and it was all about, you know, giving us programs, and if you're a narcotic offender, to push you into programs, you know. But then again, it's all about a level of willingness. If you're not willing to change, change is not going to happen.
Sure.
So what was the catalyst?
The catalyst for me was I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Yeah.
You know,
finally just kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of overwhelming. And you had kids?
Yeah. So like I said, I was living on the streets for 4.5 years.
Oh, yeah. That's an incentive.
Yeah. And I had given my kids to their grandparents just because they got in the way of my addiction. And I was, like he said, sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was just spinning circles out there, you know, and I just wanted something different.
Yeah. No kidding.
We were...
doing like a round robin here.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was arrested more times than I could count in the 2.5 years that I was on the street in Reading. And, I think one of the times that I really felt most at bottom was I had been released from jail and it was winter time and I had shorts and a tank top and it was raining and it was like 30 something degrees. And I couldn't find a blanket, so I ended up wrapping myself in plastic and cardboard and shivering myself to sleep. And that was the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. It's not the way that I want to live anymore. And it wasn't too long after that that I had the incident where I was hospitalized. And that's where everything changed. God did for me what I couldn't do for myself.
Well, you know, I think a lot of people see folks in that circumstance, you know, just kitty corner from here, Crown Camera. I don't know if it's still Crown Camera, but anyway, they have a big kind of a porch, like a front porch there. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how many Sundays we leave the studio, and there's somebody kind of camped out there. And I'm thinking, it's cold, and it's, you know, or raining or whatever. And I'm thinking, what's going on that seems like a better alternative than, I don't know, anything else?
You kind of get stuck out there. I know for me, you know, just I wanted to protect my family because they didn't like me being around because I was on drugs. So it was like I never went around, you know. I could probably go home, but the addiction was so strong that I would rather stay out on the street and be cold than go around my family and see them and have them see me like that. And I know for my grandma, she used to tell me, like, I pray for you every night that you don't wind up like your mom. You know, my mom died in this addiction. So so I feel like her prayers were answered. That brought me into this program, truly.
So when you were homeless and you decided enough's enough.
Yeah.
You're on the street. You basically have nothing.
Right.
How do you claw your way out of that? I mean, you have to find a place to live. You have to find a means of support.
Right.
I mean, that's a tough road to climb onto and try to succeed. Where do you start with something like
that?
Well,
I know for me, it was getting arrested, right? I got locked up. And then they came to me and accepted me on the program. Back, because I have almost 11 years clean now, so back 10 years ago, probation only paid for so long in residential treatment. And so I only had 45 days in residential treatment before I had to move out or go into sober living. And probation didn't pay for sober living back then. You had to find a job and pay for it or move in with a family member. So staying those days in jail and then going into Visions of the Cross was kind of like my foundation of how I clawed myself out of that.
Right.
They gave me that opportunity to do that.
Yeah, because you're not going to do this on your own. You're
no.
Not, you can't.
No.
You definitely need outside help to get back on your feet and kind of start going in the right direction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I was so desperate that, like, at one point in time, I would go and commit a crime and then stay where I committed the crime to intentionally get arrested.
Oh, boy.
Because I wanted that escape. I didn't want to be doing what I was doing. And so I'd stay in the area where I committed the crime at just so I could get a break.
Mm-hmm.
So.
For me, it was my son, my oldest son at the time was just turned 5. And I, like I said, had been in and out of foster care my whole life, lived with 20 different families, 3 group homes. My mom did 4 prison terms.
Oh, my God.
So when my probation officer told me on the time at AOP, I couldn't stop getting loaded. She said, either you're going into residential treatment with this ankle monitor on your ankle, or I'm going to put your son in CPS and you're going to go to jail in a different county because our jail's full. And at his age, I had promised myself that my kids would never go through that.
He was going to do what you just
did. Cop car. And so I made a decision to change my life then. And he's 15 now. He'll be 16 in May. So
that's pretty great.
Yeah. And my other two have never seen me in that life. So yeah.
They have no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you guys all have kids. Do you have kids?
I have 2 stepkids.
Okay.
Yeah.
So everybody's dealing with that whole range of family. Mm-hmm. Just out of curiosity, anybody in your family just not willing to kind of accept the new you, for lack of a better?
I'm still slowly kind of going through that. Like they're very cautious. Let's put it that way. They're very cautious because, and like for decades, I never realized this. I always thought that I was only hurting myself. And not my loved ones. I thought I was doing them a service by staying away from them.
Yeah.
Because I would get out of prison, go immediately to my connection, and then be off and running. I'd never make it home. And that was my choice, unfortunately. But after a while, your loved ones, you know, they have to put up those barriers to protect themselves.
Yeah.
Because you can only promise them so many things for so long and not come through with it before they have to protect themselves and put up that barrier.
And then they don't trust you anymore?
It's not a matter of trust. It's just a matter of not willing to be hurt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure.
They're waiting for you to, you know, do again what you've always done.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, I know for me, like, the rest of my family were really excited to have me in recovery. You know, my brother was like, I have my sister back, you know. But my daughter she got the brunt end of my addiction, right? I gave her to her grandma at 6, and I didn't get her home till she was 14. And so she was mad and hurt, you know what I mean?
And so 14 is a bad age to have a mad girl.
Right. And so it took...
That's probably worse than recovery.
I want to say it took 7-8 years out of the almost 11 that I've been clean for us to rebuild that relationship and her to trust me. Yeah. And now it's like we're best friends. So
that's
it's
cool.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could see that. And so for the people who out there who maybe are thinking, well, they'll never figure it out, here you all are, right?
Yeah.
You're the poster children for that. we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. We're discussing the Addicted Offender Program here in Shasta County, but I'm sure your county has something similar, and if it doesn't, you should have them contact the folks in Shasta County and figure out how you can get that put together, because it's making a really, really big difference. You can find the archive of this program, and I hope you share it. It's not copyright, protected or any of that. Do whatever you like with the archive, and you'll find it at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, so we've kind of gone around the horn a little bit. What do you guys think people need to hear? Because we can't ask you the right questions. We have not been where you have been. Fire away.
I would say the first most important thing that all of us were just talking about out here while we were waiting to come in is the people, places, and things. Mm-hmm. You have to change everything about your life before. You can't, you have to leave, you know, and I heard them talking about it when they were doing the
You can't have just a little of the friends who do drugs hanging around.
Yeah. Even family, right? Sometimes it's cutting off your own family. It's like they're still doing this and you have to do everything differently. Everything. You have to be willing to take suggestions and you have to be willing to change all aspects of your life because if you go back to the old people, places, and things, more often than not, we see it every day. You go back to the way that it used to be. It's a new support system that you have to build for yourself. For myself, I couldn't have done it without God as well. But it's like without God and the people in my life that were going to push me in a different direction, I wouldn't be who I am today. And that's where I always am stressing that with anybody that I'm working with in my life today. It's like you have to be willing to change all of those things.
Yeah, the whole mindset of, oh, I'm a gangster or I've done this or I've done that, and the people that go along with that has to go away in order for you to be successful in recovery. And like for me, myself, analyzing my own perceptions of things, I looked into like the socioeconomic aspect of it. Like, who do I want to have in my circle? Mm-hmm. What do I want my future to look like? Do I want my future to be in this circle or do I want to be successful and make my kids comfortable? And so that's where I placed myself. I placed myself in that circle and stayed away from the revolving toxicity of the other friendships.
It's kind of interesting because I would think you would have to move to a different place. I would think you would have to leave, but you...
It's a common misconception, actually.
Yes.
It follows you wherever you go. I was going
to
say that.
But then you have no support system, so is it better to have none or just the people you have to stay away from?
It doesn't matter where you go. You're going to find... If you want to get loaded, you're going to find somebody
Absolutely.
To be able to
there
get loaded.
There you go.
It doesn't matter where you go.
It's building a support system in people that are wanting the same things in your life.
And you can actually do it in the same place.
We surround ourselves with, all of us in this room in our lives today, are people who have what we want and who are striving to live the life that we're living. If you surround yourself with other than that, then you, no matter where you are.
Right, and I used to believe that. Like, I was born and raised here. Like, I've been here my whole life. I started my addiction here. I got clean here. But I used to think that I had to leave to, you know, because I knew so many people. Mm-hmm. And I used to hate Reading. I'm like, oh, my God, it used to be an amazing place. And now, but it was the people, places, and things that I was hanging out with. You know what I mean? And so, today, I mean, people, places, and things can get you loaded, but people, places, and things, if they're the right ones, can keep you sober too. So it's just like she said, changing everything in your life and sticking to it, you know, taking the suggestions like I do today that I did when I first got into recovery. Like, I go to meetings, I have a sponsor, I sponsor women, I now work for the county as a, you know, recovery coach, certified peer support, and I use my experience to help walk alongside people that are struggling to, you know, find their traction in recovery. And when you're new in recovery, doing those things are scary, whether it go to DMV, fill out, you know, GA paperwork, go to court. You know, that was one thing that almost got me my prison term was I just wouldn't go to court. You know, I had 27 failures to appear. You know what I mean? I was looking at a prison term. So just going, walking alongside somebody and being there to support them in their court case, it makes a world of difference.
And I'm a prime example that geographic change doesn't work, because I'm originally born and raised in Oregon. And I came down to Reading for a fresh start and ended up with 9 felonies and facing prison.
You weren't really good at the fresh start program?
No. I did not pass go, and I did not.
You had some fresh start challenges. That's a little too fresh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm another geographic. I was born and raised in Contra Costa County, and that's where I committed most of my whole life and most of my prison terms. And I came to Shasta County following my daughters and my grandkids. And unfortunately, within 3 months, I was looking at 14 years here. You know, so it doesn't really matter where you're at. It's when you make that decision.
How long did it take you to make the new friends here that got you into the old trouble from before?
Immediately.
Like 2 seconds?
Immediately. unfortunately for me, like my first prison term, it didn't do, it strengthened my ties with the affiliation in trafficking narcotics.
Oh. And so, like, you learned to be a better criminal in prison.
Exactly.
Like we joke about.
I went into prison for the first time for dealing narcotics, and I came out trafficking narcotics. So, I mean, it's pretty hard to become successful when as soon as you get out of jail, someone's meeting you at the gate with a couple pounds of drugs, you know?
Yeah, so they're like, hey, Steve, we heard you're really good at this, and here's your new satchel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you're destined to fail. So when I got arrested this time around here in Shasta County and I was granted this opportunity, like my peers have said, I made that commitment to change every aspect of my life, every aspect of my life.
Just out of curiosity, was there, I need to switch you so you're a little more straight in. I know it's hard. We're looking at each other through like the wires and the thing.
I see green.
The tendency is to look around, but the problem is if we don't speak straight into the microphone, then people can't hear and the stories are good. I was curious, was there a person, who was the catalyst to your change, or just circumstance, or combination?
For me, it was a combination. It was my circumstance and that I missed my kids. I wanted my kids home.
Okay.
You know? But I had to do this for myself, because if I'm not healthy for myself, I'm not healthy for my kids.
Right.
So
I just wondered, because as a person on the outside looking in, I bet there's somebody out there going, is there a code word I can use to flip the switch for them?
It's that desperation. It's that desperation that people need to hit their bottom and
timing.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely myself personally, timing. I could name drop, you know, my probation officer at the time. I could name drop, you know, my substance abuse counselor at the time that was in this room with
me. And that helped.
Quickly go. And those people were the people that showed me that I was worth more than the life that I was living. And they believed in me when I could not believe in myself. And that's why this program is so key, because the people that were just in the room before us, they're meeting us where we're at, right? They're telling us that we're worth something more. They're walking alongside us in all of the crap that we're dealing with. And they're showing us how to process that and learn how to live a different way, and giving us the tools to use to have that as a toolbox rather than the drugs and alcohol.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And like mine, I had experienced so much abuse and trauma growing up that I didn't feel like I deserved to be successful or happy. Mm-hmm. And then there was a few people prior to AOP, one particular cop, that had made a comment. He's like, why are you out here? You're too smart for this. And there had been other people that had made the same comment. And then when I got on to AOP and the treatment team, the way that they treated me was like, I was respected for the first time in a long time. I didn't feel alone. Like, 'cause that whole time that I was on the street, I felt alone. Mm-hmm. Like, you think that those people are your friends and that they've got your back and stuff, but when you show up with no blankets after just getting released from jail, who's going to be the one left in the cold?
Poof.
They're gone. Yeah. So, I mean, and so coming onto the program and really getting to feel the love and compassion that they had for us, it was truly amazing. And I feel like that was one of the biggest parts that motivated me into doing what I'm doing, which is facilitating outpatient treatment. For the county, and it's an amazing gift, and I see why they do it, because it's pretty cool to get to watch people go through the whole process.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, we talk about different tools you have to stay sober. Do you look back, I mean, as a tool, do you look back and say, you know, I remember that life. I know what I was feeling. I know how hard it was. And now I look where I am now. Does that help, or do you try not to even think about that and just look forward?
Well, I know. Oh, sorry.
It's called like playing the tape all the way through.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I've had enough sequences of recovery and relapse and constant prison terms back to back to know that
this program
works if you work it.
Right.
And it seriously doesn't if you don't. And so with that being said, like, I made a decision, like, what do I really want in life? And I want my family.
Right.
And so I made a decision that I'm going to do nothing except reunify with my family, be present, nurture that relationship, and gain an education. Mm-hmm. Because I want to make a difference.
You just finished school.
I'm in the process. I'll finish this semester.
Is that again?
Yeah. Which is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they elected me Student of the Year this year. But I work really hard at it. I spend every moment of my every day either with family or in the books. And it's starting to show.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
And school, what's your, what are you working on,
well,
education-wise?
I want to be a social worker. And I started off just going for, like, the human services social work path.
So we're not talking GED. You're in college.
I'm in college.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I kind of overachieved a little bit. So I'll be graduating with a associate's degree in social science, behavioral science, human services, and a case management certificate.
Well, look
wow.
at that.
Yeah, I'm okay. an eighth grade
dropout.
Hold on,
we need to have a moment.
Yay!
Because that's a big deal.
It is a big deal.
That is a big deal. And that, so that's, you guys are such an interesting bookends for this. Someone who got in trouble once, never went to prison. Somebody who went to prison a lot and was really good at it. Going to prison, I mean.
Right?
You were really super good at it.
It's safe to say I'm institutionalized. Or was.
Was. Yes.
Yeah.
Was.
Was.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm no longer.
No, but I mean, that can be something that can change.
It is.
And I think societally we don't, the mindset is, well, it's either get out of jail free card or go to prison forever. And there is this other space.
And unfortunately, it is that way a lot of the time, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
This program that we have is such a blessing in our area, and they don't have this everywhere. And there's not, you know, everybody can't. I mean, first of all, you have to be willing, right? That factor has to be there. But it's like, that's what happens. People, they go to prison and then they stay stuck in the prison mentality, like he said, institutionalized, right? And it's like, even for myself, not never having went to prison, but I was raised up in that life. We were just talking about that out there too. It's like straight out the trailer park, you know what I mean? And here I am now with a bachelor's degree and working in a job in the field and like all the things, right? And each one of our stories is different, but every single one of us, I think, going back to your question, it's like, how do I mean, I don't want to stay stuck in the past, mm-mm. but I work with addicts every day and I see where they're at. And I have to remember what that was like for me, one, to help them, but also to make sure that I don't ever go back.
Right. Well, it gives you something to relate to.
Right. Well, and it gives them something, right? There's hope when they right. see us in at school or in one of these positions that each of us work in the community, right? It's like, if they can do it, maybe I can do it too, right? And it was like, that's what those people that you just talked to that left this room a little bit ago were for me, right?
Yep.
If they can do it, maybe I can do it.
Yeah.
And so, and some of them never even had that in their life, right? But it was like still people that were regular, because that's what we're talking about, right? AOP is to help make us regular members of society. I want to be somebody that's not only like just here, but I'm contributing to our community in a positive way. How do we make that out of addiction? And it's this working alongside each other and saying, hey, I did this thing, you can do it too.
And I think that packs a lot of weight. I mean,
right.
when you're talking to somebody who's struggling and they know you've gone through it and come out the other side, I would think that they would listen and
yeah.
and look at you like, hey, I can do it, like you said.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell when you talk to people who are fighting this and are where you were? Can you tell, they're not ready? Like,
yeah.
These guys were talking.
We have a strong radar for that.
I bet.
Definitely.
I bet.
Yeah, for sure.
I work
Definitely.
With teens, and I see that a lot. It's like they...
With teens?
Teens uh-huh. right now in this area. Right. I teach a substance abuse class for teens, and they will be like, they don't even want to hear it, right? I mean, I'm sure there are adults too, but I think that, and it's funny too, they'll be like, I didn't even, would never thought you would have ever did drugs before, because that's how different our lives are now,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, sure. someone who never
well,
knew us
age.
Before. Yeah.
They're at that age.
Can't tell them
yeah,
nothing.
Everything.
I have one at home. Can't tell them nothing.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you can definitely see, I work with adults too in my main job, and you see it. You know if they want it or they don't.
Yeah. I would imagine you guys are a really, well, I mean, anybody who works in this industry, mm-hmm. I would imagine after a while you start seeing these telltale signs. But the hard part is to not kind of
prejudge it because you're like, oh, right. What if we miss over a gem? You know, what if we step over somebody who was just one click from being there and got booted like you did.
Yeah, and the thing too is like we can see somebody that seems like they're just using it as a get out of jail free card.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But sometimes that get out of jail free card is all it takes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's tricky. Cuz nobody starts out. I mean, if they were already rehabbed, you wouldn't have to go through rehab, so
yeah.
You're going to start out before that.
And with AOP, I think for me, like, I had an agenda, right? So, like, I just didn't want to go to program. Yeah, I missed my kids, but that addiction was still kind of strong. I didn't want to, you know, I went to program. I was just going to get off probation, and I was just going to continue to do what I do, right? And I think that we see that a lot is people that are talking the talk, right? And but it's that hope that changes, like Celie was saying, that gives people hope, that if we can do it, someone else can do it, right? And like as a recovery coach, like I'm out there, I'm helping in the community, I'm at the homeless camps, you know, and I've been at the homeless camps before, so it makes it easier for, and me and him both, like, went out there, and it makes it easier for them to come up and talk to us than anybody else that, you know what I mean?
I'm curious about
suits
that.
And ties that go out there, they're kind of standoffish. But if I walk in, out there and I tell a little bit of my story, those people open up. They take my card. They tell me a little bit about their story and see that hope in their eyes. And that's
kind of awesome. We have to take a really quick break, but when we come back, I'm going to pick up on that part because obviously homelessness is a huge issue and people are. You know, after a while, the compassion sort of goes away and everybody just gets mad about it.
Yeah.
And I think as a society, we're a little bit there. So maybe you can give us some insight there. That'd be helpful. We'll be right back. We're talking about the Addicted Offender Program here in Shasta County. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
But the good news is there's angels everywhere out on the street, holding out a hand to pull you back up on your feet. The ones that you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, or the devil even knows you're there.
Yeah, young guy, that was Bonnie Tyler. Come on. Who is that? Yes. What the hell? Steve, help us out.
I didn't know, honestly.
What?
Sorry, name that song.
I need a hero. It's Bonnie Tyler, of course. Funny.
Right. So we were
homelessness.
Yeah, we were talking about the homeless camps. I'm curious. When you go there and you talk to these folks, how often does somebody say, hey, how can I get help? How many can you actually pull out of that lifestyle?
I don't feel like that's something that you can actually put a number on because a lot of times it's more about planting the seed than it is getting results.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And so, like,
playing the long game.
Yeah. And so I've had a couple people that I was on the street with and also – after getting this job, interacted with trying to get them connected to services that have actually come in and gone to treatment and continue to be inspired by how far I've come.
Sure.
And then there's other ones where they will utilize the services that are available and they're just not ready yet. But it's about planting the seed more than it is, I got to have the results.
Right.
If you're not going to go into treatment, I'm not going to help you.
it's planting the seed and showing compassion and empathy and love for these people.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's what we do.
It's just meeting them right where they're at. You know, right, like for me, at. When I'm out in that scene or over at the library or we've seen it, you know, I do harm reduction distribution as part of my job. So I'll
what
be
does
out.
That mean?
So passing out Narcan or fentanyl and xylazine testing strips. And it's like, no, I'm not here to judge you. Here's something that could help save your life or check to see if whatever, you know, and it's like kind of like, there's going to be the people that right now they want to ask, how do I get help? And then there's just people that as you're passing out this bag, you're throwing in some like maybe meeting schedules or maybe some treatment facility like resources, and you're just putting them in these baggies. And so then maybe they're out, you know, later that night or next week or next month or whatever, and they pull that out and maybe they have their aha moment then, you know. So it's like they said, there's not really like a number, and I don't always see them, you know, running to you to ask for help in that moment just because you're out there.
Yeah.
But it is, it's just those dropping the seeds, planting the seeds,
yeah,
events that, you know, us three at least are participating in, for like the Homeless Connect and things like that. It's just where it gives them an opportunity to.
I do a lot of sales, and one of the analogies we use fits this perfectly is it's like a funnel, mm-hmm. and you just keep dropping them in the top.
Oh, yeah,
you
like that.
Know, and pretty soon one falls out the bottom, and mm-hmm. that's what feels good. We go to trade shows, we talk to 1,000 people, and somebody will say, well, did you sell anything? No. But how many of those 1,000 people are going
to
come back
later? I've been
later?
To a trade show, and that's true.
And that's
all in the funnel.
And they're all in the funnel. And I'm filling the funnel. That's how you got to look at it. You're filling the funnel.
And for me, like being as a recovery coach, the first contact out there in the field, meeting them where they're at, you know, it's a little taxing sometimes, you know what I mean, on myself. You know, a few weeks ago I lost two peers in a matter of 2 weeks, you know, which is a really heartbreaking. But what keeps me coming back is like, if I can help one out of 10 people, that makes my job worth it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just that one person.
Yeah.
You know, watching the light come on and them actually take the step and having that desperation and moving forward with the recovery. That's what makes it worth it.
Absolutely.
And that's huge. Like, I was doing an internship with Hill Country, and we would go out to the homeless camps, and we would pass out the harms reduction, and we would pass out resource information. I think that when any type of population sees their peers and can understand that the resources are available if we need them and when we need them, and the locations of these resources, not only that, but be able to walk them through the experience.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it's fear-based. Like, they don't...
That part.
You know, I know that I had a lot of fear. Like, I was afraid to ask for help because I just might get it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's huge. Because
what do you mean? Like, you would have to actually make a change? And
exactly.
You didn't really maybe want to do
it? Yeah. Change is scary.
Well, every lifestyle changes.
Yeah.
Change is scary. But... to go out and talk to somebody and see that light come on has got to be super rewarding.
It is.
Yeah.
So how do you... Okay, so you guys have experience in the homeless zone. So how do we find your guys that are like the career in and out of prison guys?
Any probation or parole office?
Right.
Yeah.
The courthouse?
Yeah. Yeah.
So is that a thing you do? Like, do you
not yet?
You go
that's
trolling for participants.
I'm getting an education for that, but for right now, I'm just the example. I live life on life's terms and show men and women with my background that it is possible.
Absolutely,
and that is really the biggest thing is just doing what you're doing, like living your life and being. The fact that you guys are really open about this is really helpful, and I'm always surprised at how. This program teaches people to be very transparent about where they've been, where they are, and where they want to go.
Right.
Exactly.
And we have a saying in recovery, we keep what we have by giving it away, right? Because it was so freely given to us, and it changed our life. So we continue to give back, like sponsor, be of service, take people to meetings, become social workers. productive members of the society is.
I feel like being transparent about where we came from can really help show the community that it doesn't matter what kind of background you came from, that you can be somebody in society that can be respected and successful and somebody that can be a role model for younger generations.
I think, too, something that is really important for, I think, anyone to hear that might be listening is not only that, but for me, it's huge to be able to, there are parts of my life where I don't have to share that. Like, I get to just be somebody that is, like, actually successful living my life today. I'm a very present mom. I have a very good job. And although I'm very open and transparent about my addiction in most cases of my life, there are places where I just get to be a functioning, productive member of society.
Yes.
And my past does not define me.
Yeah.
And that is something that I think, too, is so huge for someone to hear, that you don't always have to be. I mean, we're always going to be addicts, right? Yeah. We're always going to be alcoholics, like, to the core as far as having that ism and not being able to pick up those things ever, right? Not even just one. But at the end of the day, too, there's this whole life for us now that we have made these choices to change our lives and the steps that each of us have taken, that we don't have to be defined.
You don't have to apologize your way through your future.
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely.
You don't have to wear, like, a badge of honor.
Yes. You know, and most of us do, but it's, like, at the same time.
In a weird way.
Yes.
You know that.
Yeah. 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 You know, I was into drugs and alcohol, and therefore you owe me.
Yeah.
Yes. Or you should feel bad for me, or blah, blah, blah. It's that I think maybe they didn't pass.
That's stinking thinking, we call it.
Yeah, I think they didn't pass. I don't think you passed the program if you're still doing that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's like a mid-grade thing.
Right?
I don't think
that's
don't,
like a phase two, phase one.
Isn't it?
Thinking.
Yeah.
I don't think you get where we're at in our recovery by having a victim mindset either.
No.
You have to put the work in. That's the thing, is you're not going to get to where any
it's part of
us
the process, but it's
sitting.
Not the destination.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. You have to put the work in.
I like the way you put that, because it's got to be so rewarding to be able to look at yourself and go, you know what, I don't have to put that out there so everybody knows where I came from. I'm a successful person.
Mm-hmm.
I've done a lot of work. I've gotten to where I am, and that's what's important.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people need to see.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
In our line of work, they need to have that relatability, but in our community, it gets to be nice sometimes to get to be that other piece too, you know? And it's like... Yeah, and we're still light in the darkness, right? Regardless, but it doesn't have to always be that. Mm-hmm.
Did you, when you guys, and now I forgot to ask the question that's always so curious to me, is how long were you in this program, and did you only do it one time?
I only did it once. It was 2 years.
Okay.
I did it once because, and it was longer because of COVID.
The COVID magic.
Yeah. I graduated actually with Sam. We were in the same graduating class in 2015, but I was on the program a little bit longer than her. So it kind of just depends. Like, what now, things are a little bit different too. There's different regulations, but realistically, like they were saying in your part one, it's like it's very individualized.
Yep.
It's like what person is ready for this? And if they don't feel like you're ready, like, there's no BS here. Like, they will hold you accountable.
Well, not if you're going to see them 3 and 4 times a week. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I tried. No. Trust me. I was like, no, Kim, I do not need residential treatment. I got this. I can do it on my own.
I totally see you doing that.
And she was like, you're going to visions. That is not an option for
you're going
you
to sleepover camp for.
Yeah.
Right.
As an addict, you try, like, right? Manipulation is our number one learned thing, right? But
skill set, I think, is what we call it.
Yeah.
The skill set to unlearn. How long did it? Were you in this program?
I was in this program 2 years, 8 months.
Okay.
But I've been through just about every program you can think of. My first program was Right Roads back in the early 80s.
Oh, God.
And I've gone through every single Bay Area residential treatment. I mean,
you're like the Yelp of rehabilitation.
Yeah. You know, but through each decade of my recovery experiences, a serious seed has been planted and a layer of my onion has come out, you know, so I was able to look a little bit deeper. I can't say that I've ever gone through any type of rehabilitation setting and not gained something.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Whether we use it or not is the story.
Yeah. So I'm curious, with the different amounts of time that you are in the program, what dictates that? Do you fall off the wagon, or what do you...
There's so many
why
factors.
Why does it take longer or shorter for certain
people? Can be... you can miss a group. You can be late to a test line. You can, I mean, there's so many. There's
fake a meeting card.
Yeah, fake a meeting card. Oh, miss a meeting.
Caught.
There's different. There's different things that can get you in a little bit of trouble and have a little setback.
And it set you back. And you
right.
Kind of start
because that's that thinking. They're trying to change our thinking.
Okay.
And if we're like trying to, you know, fake a meeting and forge a signature, we're still not at that next level.
Right.
You got to move us back. So.
And sometimes, you know, relapse can be a part of that too. They
yes.
don't always just send you right to prison if you've relapsed. I mean, that can be a consequence, but,
right.
but that
there
isn't
are
always
people
what happens.
Who have, you know, relapsed and then had to, like, go back. You know, you go all the way back to phase two, or you go to phase one and you're in jail and you do that again, and then they are like, okay, we're not going to send you to prison. Let's try to
fix
get what
the
you
problem.
Didn't get.
Mm-hmm.
And I would think that, I mean, that's an important part of the deal. I mean, because nobody's
and we're
perfect.
In the last 45 seconds, just FYI.
It is, but honesty has...
Talk really fast.
Honesty is number one. Like, if you're trying to hide it, obviously you've got some serious issues.
Yep.
But if you're honest and forthcoming, like, yeah, I made a mistake.
He's talking really fast.
You know, then everybody makes mistakes, right?
Sure, yeah.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Honesty, willingness... What's the other one?
Open-mindedness.
Yeah.
That's why it's a group activity.
Yeah.
Where's my break?
Quick break out
go blank.
I didn't have coffee before this.
Right.
Well, yeah. Coffee and energy drinks. Thank you all for coming on with us.
Absolutely.
And I think we'll do this some more because it's a process, right?
Yeah.
So we should include people in the process. I really appreciate
Absolutely.
You being here with us today.
Thank
and
you.
Yeah,
so
thank
you can find this show this afternoon. It's the 10th of March, 2024. And this afternoon we'll have the commercial free archive up for you to share at We the People Radio.
US.
Oh, that was great, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Don't stop believing.